Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They've got over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Plus, their fee is free unless they win. If you want more information, head over to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial #law, #529 from your cell phone. That's forthepeople, forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
And welcome to the Lombardi Line here on VSiN. I'm your host, Dave Ross, here at Circus Sports in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. He is our GM, Michael Lombardi, back on the East Coast. Good morning to you, Michael. What a way to reintroduce the Lombardi Line, my friend, with some of the wildest endings I think we've seen in a long time.
Wow, what a weekend of football. I mean, it was from the Baltimore-Cleveland game, which ended on the last play. You almost thought Lamar was going to pull that one off, to the nightcap, I mean, to the Washington game. Mm-hmm. I mean, who would have thought that? That was really unbelievable. You know what's really striking about that play, Dave, was to me, Chicago had three timeouts. Don't you think they should have used one of them just to get organized? You know, and they got some stupid player, Stevenson, over there messing with the fans. I mean, he wouldn't have been on the team playing coming home if I was the GM. But, I mean, the reality of it is it was just a great weekend to watch games. It was fun. Even the nightcap last night, I apologize. I know your Cowboys lost, but it was at least an entertaining game.
At least they made it interesting at the end. We will get to that. But let's start right where you did, Michael, because you're right. You look at, you know, Tyreek Stevenson, it's going viral. You're seeing him. He's jawing with the fans. Something I've never seen before in a Hail Mary situation. You've seen this all throughout your time. We've seen it before on sidelines. Guys are, you know, getting into it with the fans, not during the play, not during the final play with his back to the actual play as the receivers are coming down. All kudos to Jaden Daniels for buying time and, you know, having the ability to set his feet and make a great throw down there for Noah Brown to be the recipient of it. But what is your takeaway from that? Because you know this and how coaches drill where you're supposed to be, and let's be at the goal line. Let's make sure, you know, if the ball is short, we got to tackle. Like, what's the right, what's the wrong from what came out of that game deciding play?
Well, what's right about it is you don't need defensive players on the field. You know, Cole Kmet, I don't know if he was on the field, but he should have been on the field. You need big, tall guys that know how to handle the ball. Remember Gronk? I mean, the Miami game, New England messed this up years ago. Gronk kind of had a, you know, got thrown over his head. But the one thing is you can't be, no one can be behind you. No one can be behind you because you want to make sure that ball goes down. It doesn't go up like we're playing beach volleyball. So I think to me, it would have been really a good idea to call timeout. I mean, when you look at, if you go back and look at the sideline of the Bears, I mean, Caleb Williams is out there coaching. You got him talking to players, you know, and to me, I think situational football yesterday was really obvious. Teams that do it, teams that handle it, teams that don't do it very well. And the Bears, look, it was an unfortunate thing that happened. They were fortunate to get back in the game with a great fourth quarter that they were able to do something. Daniels looked like he wasn't 100%, but to me, this play is about no one can get behind the defense. You need your big guys out there. It doesn't matter if you're offense or defense. You're not making a tackle. You're playing volleyball. Get the ball on the ground. Don't worry about an interception and make the play. I mean, when you looked at Bayard, he was shocked that nobody was behind him. I don't think that was his man. And so I think there was a level. To me, if you're looking on the field and you see one of your players talking to the fans, call timeout. Just call. You had three of them. Call timeout. Right. Get yourself what we call a Kodak. Take a picture of what they're going to do. You know, see how you're going to handle this. I mean, they rushed four on the play but they wanted to be able to. He needed to move around so that he had time to set his feet to throw it all the way up the field. I think that's something that you take a look at. He had so much time, and that time allowed the receivers to get down the field. But what a great win for Washington. I mean, they're 6-2. They're leading in the East now. And Chicago had a chance to steal a game, and they didn't.
It is. It's rather amazing, too. And the toll that it took on bettors out there yesterday with the line moves of the week, right? It opens up Chicago 1. It goes all the way up to 2.5. Then we get the news that Daniels is going to play, and it goes flips all the way to the Commanders 1.5. If you're a Bears backer yesterday and you had them laying 2.5, you're like, this is a miracle. We come down, you take the lead, you go for two, you get it, you're up three. And there's 24 seconds, Michael, when they kick it off. And remember, there's an incompletion. They get 5 seconds that gets burned on the kickoff return. So they have second and 10 with 12 seconds to go from their own 24-yard line. What do you think the odds are at that point of the Commanders somehow winning in regulation?
I don't know what they could be, but you know, they completed that out right in front of them. And to me, that's what that was the play that hurt them the most, mm-hmm. right? Because that gave them a chance, for as strong as arm as Daniels has, that gave him a chance to throw the ball towards the end zone, right? He didn't reach the end zone. It was fortunate the ball got tipped backwards. I mean, if anybody got caught in at the 5, the game's over. But it wasn't. It got tipped backwards. So that out route that you allowed, I think to me, was the biggest part of the problem. It seemed like the Bears weren't prepared for that situation on the field. Look, there's nothing wrong with calling timeout. We do it in basketball all the time. Call timeout, make sure everybody's aware of the situation, and you really should have a special unit on the field at that time with, you got guys that have great size that can box out, that know how to rebound. I mean, that's essentially what we're doing. We're playing, you know, it's a jump ball in the paint, and we're trying to make a play. And so, look, it's one of those things that, you know, the Bears fought hard to get back in that game. Really, Swift's run was sensational. They got the ball. How about the fumble? They try to hand the ball off. Can you imagine? They have this play and they try to hand the ball off to an offensive lineman. I mean, what are we doing here? You know, and I know all the Bear bettors are like, oh my gosh, we lost that game. Well, I mean, sometimes you shoot yourself in the foot with stupidity. I think that handoff to the fullback, who's an offensive lineman, I know you want to recreate the William Perry refrigerator touchdown, but geez, oh man.
First thing I thought of was like, are we going back to the Bears 85? Like, what are we doing with the Perry, refrigerator Perry trying to score with linemen? By the way, Jaden Daniels now, Michael, after this game, he is catapulted, as you can imagine, in the rookie of the year. He's now 4-1 as the screen actually flashes right before my eyes. And Caleb is now plus 350. Those are the only two guys now in single digits. You know, Michael, it will get lost a little bit, but Caleb was dynamic in that fourth quarter. He was terrible for three, but he was really good in that fourth quarter. Yeah. What's your takeaway on the 1 and 2 picks now in the NFL draft? It looks like both these teams potentially got this thing right.
I think going into the game, it proved out to be correct. I think Daniels' ability to throw the ball in the third level is rare. Mm. He's got unbelievable accuracy down the field. He's got great touch. Caleb struggles throwing the football down the field, right? He does. But I think where Caleb was so good, I mean, you know, he only had 10 completions in the game. Think about that, David. Mm. 10 completions in the game. Well, we'll get to Anthony Richardson, who averages 10 completions in a game all the time. But to me, what I think he was able to do is he got out of some real trouble. He was able to be an escape artist. And the throw he makes to Keenan Allen when he should have been sacked twice on that play was sensational. It was a 22-yard gain that I didn't think Keenan Allen could make. You know, he wasn't covered because it was a loose play. So I think Caleb, he's eventually going to improve his down the field. But look, I give Caleb a ton of credit. I said at the beginning of the year, I'll say it again, this Bears offensive line isn't very good. You know, and he was under heavy pressure. He only got sacked twice, but he was under heavy pressure all day.
Yeah.
You know, and they had some injuries in the Bears offensive line. But to me, at the end of the day, the Bears, when they go against the good teams, when they take that step up in class, when they have to play the Detroits or even the Green Bays or Minnesotas, I think this offensive line is going to be to prove their downfall.
18-15, as you see it, to Michael's point, 10 of 24 here for Caleb Williams in that loss. 131 yards. Again, a very good fourth quarter, but the rest of it did not look great. And you see Daniels, even with the bad ribs, 326, no picks, had the Hail Mary touchdown, of course, and even ran it for 52 yards. You mentioned Anthony Richardson and the Colts. That's the kind of the tale of two Hail Marys, Michael. 23-20, Colts come up short, and he doesn't even get to make the throw as he gets sacked on the game's final play. Admitted during the game that he had come out because he was tired, which is a first for me in all the years of listening to quarterbacks and covering some of these things. What'd you make of that? And kind of like, if that is in fact, maybe just keep that to yourself.
Well, he said it out loud. He admitted it. I mean, give the kid credit for being honest, but here to me is this. I don't know about anybody else, but the bettors, and I'm sure Marquee Network, I'm sure we have a lot of Colt fans here. I don't know how you bet the Colts. because they're the most aggravating team to me in the National Football League, because Richardson drives me crazy. He hasn't gotten better one bit. He's the guy that, you know, he's like the great golf. He's the amateur golfer who has one really good hole, and he thinks he's going to end up shooting 68 one day in his life, and it never happens, right? But he keeps going back to the course because he has that one great hole. I mean, he's got 10 out of 32 completions. Oh. I mean, what are we talking about here? You know, and he sacked five times. So I got Anthony Richardson giving me agita on one side. And then when I'm watching him on defense, I mean, Gus Bradley's giving me agita on the other side. Like, I'm like, there's no pleasure in watching the Colts for me ever at all. I mean, it was a 5-point spread, but you end up cashing, but there's no pleasure when you watch them. I mean, they're just, to me, they could be a really good team if they had a better defensive coordinator. There's no question about that. I'll go on record as saying that. I wrote that after week two of the season. And they'd be a much better team if Joe Flacco played quarterback. I mean, this team could maybe win the South if they just got some better quarterbacking. But you go 10 for 32. Look, let the kid stand next to Steichen. Like, he's got a 5-year contract. He's not going anywhere, but he's not ready to play. What we noticed yesterday, which was so obvious, is these NFL teams are so predetermined to make a guy a good player, even when the evidence isn't there. What happened to Cleveland Browns? They couldn't get a first down to save their life on third down. They were the worst third down team in football. In comes Jameis Winston. All of a sudden, they're become an explosive offense. They don't even have Amari Cooper, right? They're missing guys. In the offensive line isn't nearly as bad as it's been. They beat Baltimore. It's the same thing. If Flacco plays yesterday, they're going to beat Houston. At some point, don't you say, look, isn't winning? I mean, we're not a developmental league. 10 for that. What bothers me about Richardson, he hasn't gotten better at all, even though he's playing.
It's stunning to watch. I'm right there with you. And I was on the Colts yesterday, so luckily got that cash, but, you know, also had sprinkled a little bit on the money line.
You're always going to say that when you bet the Colts, David.
Yeah.
You're going to say, luckily I got it, because it's 3 hours of sweat. It's 3 hours of sweat watching Colts games.
It absolutely is. And by the way, they're 4-4. Texans are now 6-2, but the Texans have beaten the Colts twice, so it feels like a 3-game lead already in the South. And I'm with you. Like, I get it. You know, Flacco, you're trying to develop the kid, but are you trying to win? You're 4-4. You're right there. You're in the midst of a playoff run, but I don't know if you're going to get there with Anthony Richardson. Michael, it's a great way to start the Lombardi line. We have a lot of games to break down. Of course, going to have Rich Gannon, Carl Johnson on the program as well today. Don't go anywhere. It's the Lombardi line here on VSiN.
This is the Lombardi line on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We continue the Lombardi line here on a Monday morning. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi. And Michael, on a Monday, it's always great to have Rich Gannon to join the program here to get his expertise as a former quarterback in this league at the highest of levels, playing in Super Bowls. And you name it, Rich has been there, done that. And Michael, I know we wanted to start off with kind of the conversation we were just having about Joey B, speaking of quarterbacks, and how it's not necessarily so easy to just win 10 games, right?
No question. You know, Rich, I mean, you've got great experience in this area, too. I mean, I was taken back by Burrow. I watched his team play, I thought they were soft as hell. Like, I don't see how they're just going to automatically win 10.
You know, Michael, it really reminds me of my 1993 season in Washington. I got traded right before the start of the season from Minnesota. And Richie Pettibone was taken over for Joe Gibbs. And the team wasn't very good. I saw it on the practice field. I saw it during games. And they kept saying in the locker room, the guys were like, that's okay. We're the Redskins. We'll get on a roll. It'll be just fine. And I kept on saying to myself, I just don't see it. It was a team that was long in the tooth. We just weren't very good on the perimeter. We were a slow football team. And they kept saying that. We finished 4-12. They fired the head coach. They got rid of all three quarterbacks. And I'm like, you know what? That's what happens. The Bengals aren't very good. They're 3-5 right now. They need a reality check. T. Higgins didn't play yesterday. They really missed Joe Mixon. I mean, the physicalness that he brought to that offense, not only in the running game, the passing game, short yardage and goal line, they don't have that guy. And then Luan Aramo's defense has grossly underperformed this season. So the Eagles had their way with them yesterday, and that should be a real eye-opener, I think, in that locker room in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And again, Rich, when I look at what happened here in the desert yesterday, and I want to get your thoughts on that as well, with the Raiders going down 27-20 to the Chiefs. Obviously, they had their opportunities, and Michael and I were talking about it with Antonio Pierce. you know, first year as the actual instead of the interim, now as the head coach, there's opportunities to take advantage of things that they did not get it done in goal line. What's the disconnect there? Why are they struggling so much and settling for field goals in situations where they need touchdowns, certainly to upset the apple cart and beat the defending world champions?
You know, I hate to say this, but they're a little bit like Cincinnati. They think they're better than they are. I mean, they keep on telling themselves they're going to be okay. We'll beat the Chiefs. Look, you know, they had chances yesterday. The Chiefs, let's be honest, the Chiefs aren't the Chiefs that we're normally used to, right? They have their own issues on offense. And, you know, they're getting by with what they have, which says a lot about that football team and the coaching. You know, Andy Reid is a really good head coach and also an excellent play caller, and they've got one of the best defensive coordinators in the game and a pretty stout defense. So, look, I give the Raiders credit. They always play the Chiefs hard. You know, Gardner Minshew is who he is. They can't run the football, and they're not as good as they thought they were going to be defensively. So they had opportunities. They're not very good in short yardage and goal line situations. That's been a problem all season for the Raiders. When you get down and when you get a turnover like that, and you go four downs and you come away with no points, to me that was a huge turning point in that game.
Unbelievable, Rich. I mean, what did you think of his decision to go for it? I mean, like every time I turn around, Pierce just like he dazzles me with his in-game management. I shake my head all the time. Like I get, you know, like to me, when you have three chances down there and you can't get it, you might want to just take the points because, I mean, what's going to make the fourth one the charm?
No, that's the thing. Look, I don't think that offensive line, particularly the right side, I don't think Colt Miller's playing as well as he has in the past. You know, their best player right now is the tight end, Brock Bowers, their rookie tight end. You know, I just think that Jacoby Myers helped a little bit yesterday. There's no question about that. You know, Madison's not a bad running back. I mean, he'll give you some tough hard carries. But it seems like every time they hand him the ball, he's getting hit at or around the line of scrimmage. So the offensive line's not been very good. I don't know who's coaching that group. And, you know, I think offensively the scheme, when you look at the scheme and what they're trying to do with the personnel that they have, it just seems like it's a real stretch each week.
Rich, a lot of times, you know, magic gets thrown around a lot. Oh, this team's they're magical this year. Can we say that about the Commanders 6-2 now in the manner in which they win that game yesterday with the Jaden Daniels Hail Mary? Is something happening in the district that's obviously a little bit different from what we've seen in yesteryear?
Yeah, I think when you have a game like that, especially when you didn't practice Wednesday or Thursday, you were questionable. There was a kind of a really up until game time in terms of whether or not he would play. I thought he played well, all things considering. I think he threw the ball better than I thought he would. I thought his movement was better than I thought. I give Cliff Kingsbury a lot of credit for really building a system of football around what he does well, what he likes to do, what he's got a history of doing. And they've been very creative, you know, and I just think that the defense yesterday was a surprise to me. The Washington's starting to come around a little bit defensively. They played better than I thought. On the other side of it, Caleb Williams went back to playing like he did the first 2 weeks of the season. He just struggled until the fourth quarter. So, you know, but to lose the game, and you guys, you know the play I'm referring to, the last play of the game, what happened on the other side of that ball was real travesty in terms of a young player not really – being in the moment. And I always say, when you put your own self-interest ahead of those of your team, then you put yourself and your team at risk. And that's what Stevenson did in that situation.
You mentioned the Chiefs have their own problems. I watched the Buffalo-Seattle game closely. I think Buffalo's the best team in the East. I think they may be the best team in the AFC. The way they play, their physicality has so improved. What are your thoughts on Buffalo as it relates to Kansas City?
Mike, I agree about the physicality part. Yesterday, they really got after Seattle on both sides of the ball. That was really apparent. Their defense, to me, is better than I anticipated. They're not the biggest group up front, you know that. And, you know, I thought Seattle would come in there and try and run the ball with Walker and Charbonnet, and they weren't able to do that yesterday. And you look at the Bills, they got a four-game lead in that division, and they've won four games by 21 or more points. So they're rolling people right now. Josh threw his first interception of the season. Of course, it was in the direction of Amari Cooper. I don't know that Amari Cooper is going to be the answer to all their problems. I think he can give you a handful of plays. He does two things well. He runs a slant route, which he did yesterday because he was indecisive, and he runs a go ball where he can use his big body. The rest of it, you're just not sure about. So if I was coaching Josh Allen, I'd advise him to be cautious when thrown in the direction of Amari Cooper because he'll fool you at times. But that's a conversation for another day. But I agree with you. I mean, Josh is he's unique. There's not a lot of quarterbacks like him in the game. He's very physical. And I think they play to a certain style of football that Sean McDermott coaches and preaches. And I think that is a good thing for the Buffalo Bills.
Rich, you know all about winning MVPs in this league. If Kirk Cousins played the Buccaneers every week, I think he'd be the MVP of the league. This is ridiculous, the numbers. Four more touchdowns yesterday in another win over the Buccaneers. What are you seeing from Kirk? Because I think early on we thought, oh, no, aging quarterback coming off a devastating injury, this isn't going to work. It looks like it's starting to work, and maybe the Falcons now with two wins over the Bucs, they really got a leg up in that division.
You know, if you guys watched the tailgate show yesterday, I love this game for the over because you have two explosive offenses. You've got two really good quarterbacks. Even the Buccaneers without Evans and Godwin, I still thought they'd put up some points because why? Both defenses are bad, right? So Atlanta can't play defense. Yeah. Neither can the Buccaneers. And so I thought both quarterbacks would play well. I wasn't surprised. The last time Kirk Cousins faced the Buccaneers, he threw for 500 yards. So. Right. Look, you give this kid a clean pocket. He's a little bit like Jared Goff. If you give him a clean pocket, he can set his feet. He can be as good as anybody. He's really talented, ultra competitive. He's a student of the game. Football is important to him, and I think he realizes this is his legacy. This is an opportunity to take another team to the postseason. Maybe try and win a championship. I don't think they're good enough to do that, guys. But the quarterback is playing well. And you talk about MVP candidates. Don't count out Goff in Detroit for what he's doing. I mean, he's gone a month now where he's been flawless.
Unbelievable, Rich. I mean, look, that game was over in the first quarter. I mean, they just took care of business on that one. You know, the big news, Miami has Tua come back. And then, of course, they have the meltdown in the fourth quarter. You know, to me, Miami's another team along the line of Cincinnati. They're just not tough enough, physical enough when it needs to really matter. They had a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter and couldn't close it down.
Yeah, Michael, you were all over this one. You talked about they weren't playing great football before Tua got hurt. You know, I thought he certainly provided a spark. I think he gave them reason for hope to get back in this race. You know, but look, the ball was on the ground too much yesterday. You know, the quarterback center exchange, there was two issues there. He got the ball knocked out of his hand one time. I just thought they were a little bit out of rhythm. I think the speed of the game certainly was a factor. And on the other side of it, you know, they had no answer for Trey McBride. I mean, every time I looked up, Trey McBride was wide open catching a pass. And, you know, the other thing is, as you look at their defense, didn't play as well as I thought they would. So, you know, Mike McDaniel's got a lot of work to do if this team's got any chance of getting back in the race in the AFC East.
Plus 350 right now for the Fish to make the playoffs here, and the win total now at 6.5. Very quickly as we wrap it up here, and Rich, always great having you on the Progressive Guest Line. When you look at Daniels, you look at Caleb, can we just now say those teams got it right at 1-2 going forward for their futures?
I think so. You know, I think both have unique skill sets. I think both are ultra talented young players. I think you got to continue to build the program around those two quarterbacks, but you got to be pleased with what we've seen through the first half of the season.
Yeah, so far, and certainly hope in D.C. and maybe even in Chicago, despite that disappointing outcome. Rich, really enjoy the conversation. Thanks for joining us here on the Lombardi Line.
You guys are the best. Thanks.
Thanks, Rich.
Great stuff from Rich Gannon. We're going to have Carl Johnson join us in hour number two, Michael, but we have so much more football to break down from what we saw yesterday. And yes, I need you to give me a therapy session on the Cowboys. We'll discuss that next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We continue the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi going to have Carl Johnson from Beau Rivage join us in the next segment. But Michael, it is time to step into your office.
The appointments are lined up.
You waiting for somebody in there?
Got an appointment.
And it's not about what you want to hear, but what you need to hear.
It's not personal. It's strictly business.
It's time you and me had a private talk winger. Step into my office.
It's Step Into My Office with Michael Lombardi. Mr. Lombardi, we'll see you now.
Making the playoffs after a 2-6 or a 3-5 start is hard to do. Losing a game on a Hail Mary pass, Chicago fans, we know that's rough. Hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. If you're ever injured, you can check out Morgan & Morgan. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They've got over 100 offices nationwide, more than 1,000 lawyers. Submitting an injury claim with Morgan & Morgan is so easy. If you're ever injured, you can check out Morgan & Morgan. Their fee is free unless they win. So for more information, go for forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law. That's pound 529 from your cell phone. And that's for the people, forthepeople.com/bestbets or pound law, pound 529 from your cell. Okay, Michael, it is time to step into your office. Your first person walking in today is Aaron Rodgers.
Mr. Rodgers. I thought we were going to play the... Don't we have like a sound part we could play here? Elliot, why don't you run that sound?
This is a moment of darkness, and we understand that the outside world is going to get really loud right now. But the only thing I know in life is that when it gets dark and it gets hard, that you work and you point the finger at yourself and you look inward and you figure out what can I do better in an individual standpoint.
Yeah, I've been in the darkness. You got to go in there, make peace with it. Offensively, our goal has just got to be score 30. Doesn't matter what the other two sides are doing. You know, we have trust in our defense and teams. But if we're not scoring 30, we're underachieving. This offense can do that every single week.
Well, there is a darkness on the edge of town. There's no question. And that edge of town is you're not making the playoffs. Look, you know, to me, all these conversations about darkness, about being in this hole, they have to end up with winning a game, making critical plays when you need to make critical plays. And I don't know how Greg Zuerlein is still your kicker. Does anybody watch the games? Oof. He's the most inaccurate kicker in the National Football League this year, not even close. Chad Ryland has made the Cardinals a better team when they added him on their team. I mean, Carlson made the 49ers a better team when they added him on their team. Like, you're going to keep going with Zuerlein? Every time I thought about making the Jets play, I thought, to me, their kicker's horrendous. You can't count on him. He missed more kicks yesterday and misses an extra point. How is he still employed? Oh, I know, because he's a vested veteran and you can't really cut him unless it costs you money. So, look, that darkness is going to keep getting darker. And what I would say to most Jet fans is, and I don't say this to be cavalier about it, is that they haven't even seen the darkest point yet. I mean, the worst is yet to come. And it's going to continue to happen because you've built your team. You've built this whole organization around a 41-year-old. You've done everything for him. And guess what happened? Father time has won. Father time has won. He's not the same player. That just goes along with it naturally. You trade for Devontae Adams so you could have, what, average 10 yards a catch? I mean, tell me what move you're making that really has improved the team. We won't hear from Joe Douglas. He's in the darkness. So to me, it's only going to get darker.
That was a pretty good assessment right there of where the Jets are, Michael. Okay, the Bengals, they get trounced in the second half at home yesterday to the Eagles. Joe Burrow says, hey, everything, just everybody relax. We're going to be just fine. Michael, Zach Taylor is walking into your offense. Your advice, sir.
Zach, you better not relax, because the biggest problem is you, because your team is so soft. Look, I learned this a long time ago when I watched Sean Payton down in New Orleans. Sean Payton was soft, but he also had Bill Parcells in his life. And there was a time where Sean Payton would run wide stick to get first downs on third and three. He would run spacing on third and three. But then he realized, you know, I'm not beating anybody being soft. I got to get physical. I've got to find a run game to complement what I do. Meanwhile, you've gone the opposite direction. You've got nothing but nickel running backs on your team. You let Joe Mixon walk, who gave you some physicality. Look, I didn't think Mixon was good last year either. I thought he lost his legs. But I think what I misevaluated on Joe Mixon last year was you, because you don't coach tough. Your team isn't tough. You know, you got a really good defense coordinator, Lou Amoromo, but that defense stinks because you probably don't practice hard enough. You probably don't do the things you need to do to make your team more physical. And teams have caught up with you. You just can't beat teams with receivers and playing a 7-on-7 game. At what point are you going to decide football's a contact sport? You want to win the 7-on-7 tournament? Go ahead. You ain't winning anything the way you're going.
Plus $1.10 to still make the playoffs, Bengal backers. I'm not one of those people. Bears, great fourth quarter comeback. And then we've got the Hail Mary, and you get victory just ripped away from you. Matt Eberflus is now walking into your office. Michael, what do you say on a day like today?
Well, what I would say is there's nothing you could do about it other than learn. I mean, this is a great opportunity. The first thing I would do is I would call the young man, Stevenson, into my office, and I would tell him, I'm not playing you until you earn the trust back on the team. You put him back on the field again, and basically you're telling the team you're allowing it to happen. You're allowing his stupid behavior to affect the team. Now he was doing it the whole game. He got a penalty during the game. He and McLaurin got into it. It was him all the way enticing people. For me, I think you've got to do something. You're going to have to show an example on Stevenson and get him off the field. I don't care if you drafted him in the second round. I don't really care about any of that. This is about the culture of the team. And then secondly, I think you better really go over situational football, because you clearly didn't have the right setup. You had no one behind it. The players didn't know what they were doing. Watch the sideline tape. Caleb Williams is out there coaching players like he would know what to do. Like, seriously, what's Caleb Williams talking about? You know, coaches coach, players play. And it really wasn't organized. And I think you have no one to blame but yourself. The play before you allowed them to get 12 yards freely when they couldn't really throw the ball. I mean, if you just jam the receivers, look, what do you want to do on that play? You know, you want to make sure that the clock winds down, you know, tackle the receiver, they'll call a defensive penalty. They only move the ball 5 yards on defensive holding. It's not pass interference. So you move them 5 yards, they would have never made it to the end zone. The ball didn't make it to the end zone. Situational football has not been the strength of the Chicago Bears, and you need to work on it.
Yeah, 3 timeouts, but at least he still has all of those. I like what you said earlier, Kodak. Just take a picture, see what that offense is going to do, and then maybe readjust your defensive alignment before that Hail Mary. Okay, Colts, another tough loss. They lose by 3. Hey, you get the money if you bet the Colts yesterday, but you don't get a win. Anthony Richardson looks like and feels like still a project at this point. Michael, Shane Steichen is entering your offense. What's your advice for Shane?
Shane, your job is to win. Your job is to win. And the player who gives you the best chance to win is Joe Flacco. Now, if you want to develop Anthony Richardson for the future, that's great. But all you're doing is hurting the other 52 guys in the locker room. Everybody knows Flacco's the better player. It's not even debatable. Anthony Richardson and his 10 completions ain't going to cut it. Now, maybe you should integrate him into the game at some point. That's great. But to me, I think you got to come up with a new plan. You start Flacco. You find a little package for Richardson. You make him have to defend it. You maybe rotate it in. But when the game's on the line, you better put Flacco in there, because this kid's not ready to play. And the scariest part about Anthony Richardson is I haven't seen him improve one bit. We saw the Utah game. He looked like he should have won the Heisman when he played Utah versus Florida. The next week against Mississippi State or whomever, he was horrible, just like he is here. 10 completions aren't going to cut it the last time I checked. Now, he needs to play. I get that. But he can't be costing you wins. And between him and Gus Bradley, there's no answer for either one.
Dallas Cowboys are under 500. They're 3-4. They lose a tough one last night, Sunday Night Football. Jerry Jones said infamously before this season, they're all in. Cowboys are all in. Jarrah's walking into your office here on a Monday, Michael. What do you have to say to the owner of the Dallas Cowboys?
Well, look, I think to me, what you have to do is make a decision. Did this decision you made to not extend everybody after your unhappiness with the Cowboy game was the Packer game was the right decision? But I will say this to you. You're going to have to get better personnel. Whoever you bring in is going to have to increase the talent level of the team, because right now you've got a couple really good players. You know, obviously Dak's not going anywhere. CeeDee Lamb's not going anywhere. You're going to re-sign Parsons. But the most important thing is you're going to have to improve the talent level. You're just not good enough right now. And I think that falls on you as a general manager. And I think you have to accept responsibility. You haven't lost these games because you've been outcoached. You've lost these games because the other team's better.
By the way, I love that analysis, because I know the knee-jerk today is, oh, fire Mike McCarthy. But really, this doesn't fall on Big Mike. It's more on Jerry in the front office.
Yeah, I think to me, look, you know, it's to me, Jerry had one of the worst off seasons of anybody. And it isn't because, you know, he didn't spend any money. It's because he didn't address any themes.
Right.
He could have easily. He needed a running back. I mean, Zeke, it's a great story to reunite with Zeke. I love it. But Zeke's a short yardage back. He can't be the back. And if you're going to try to take you can't throw the ball as many times as Dak's throwing it and think you're going to win. You got to control the pace of the game. And that offensive line isn't good enough to pass block 50 times a game.
Zeke had the longest run of the season for him, 11 yards yesterday. And we're kicking the tires on Dalvin Cook. That's what the Cowboys are right now with that running game. All right, Michael, when we come back, we're going down south to catch up with Carl Johnson here at Beau Rivage. That is next here on the Lombardi Line.